Now more than ever, Lowe's knows you don't just want a low price, you want the lowest price. And with our lowest price guarantee, you can count on us for competitive prices on all your home improvement projects. If you find a qualifying lower price somewhere else on the same item, we'll match it. Lowe's, we help, you save. Price match applies to same item, current price at qualifying retailers. Exclusions and terms apply. Learn how we'll match price at lowes.com/lowestpriceguarantee.
Put us in a box. Go ahead. That just gives us something to break out of. Because the next generation 2025 GMC Terrain Elevation is raising the standard of what comes standard. As far as expectations go, why meet them when you can shatter them? What we choose to challenge, we challenge completely. We are professional grade. Visit GMC.com to learn more.
Hi everyone, welcome to the Value Inspiration Podcast. My name is Ton Dobber and I'm the founder of Value Inspiration. The purpose of my company is to help business software companies rethink what can be to become remarkable again. The goal that I have with this podcast is to inspire new forms of value creation by sharing compelling ideas and stories about the potential that we can unlock when technology and people blend in the right way. So my strong belief is that we can think big, and therefore we should. And doing so will help to create a better world for all of us. And this podcast is all about that. The guest on my podcast this week is Mark Esposito, professor of business and economics at Harvard University and co-founder of Nexus Frontier Tech.
So DRIVE is a framework of what we call the future trajectories, things that we think will happen for a fact that will have an impact on major socioeconomic systems. Rather than thinking about the future as being this futuristic scenario far away from us, we try to determine what the future will look like, which gave the title to the book, by understanding the present. So DRIVE is much more of what we call an instrument for present casting rather than just for forecasting. It's mainly for, it's mainly to understand how to position themselves in the next few years. So for me, more than a competitive advantage is a positioning advantage. But they are proactively creating the future they want to have. As much as you benchmark, most disruption doesn't happen from your own industry. It happens from outside of your own field of vision. And so DRIVE is a way to engage you with multiple factors, and some of them might be what we call no-market factors that are not currently in your business model.
This is Mark. He's a professor of business and economics teaching at Harvard University's Division of Continued Education. He's also serving as an Institute Council co-leader at the Microeconomics of Competitiveness program at Harvard Business School. He also holds professorship at Holt International Business School and IE Business School in Paris. In 2016, he was appointed as a research fellow at the Circular Economic Research Institute at the Judge Business School at the University of Cambridge. He was also appointed a fellow of the Mohammed bin Rashid School of Government in Dubai in 2017, and as a global expert for the Global Economic Forum. Mark was shortlisted for the Thinkers 50 Breakthrough Idea Award in 2017 because of his work around the DRIVE framework, which he co-created with Terence Tsi, which I interviewed in one of my earlier podcasts. I personally met with Mark at the Future of Business Forum in Paris, where we both spoke, and I have read that book in the meantime myself. The framework it provides inspired me, hence I invited Mark to my podcast. And during our interview, we will explore the DRIVE framework in more detail, and in particular, how it will help organizations of all sizes to reveal the critical insights to shape their future proactively and to find new, unexploited markets. By listening to this interview, you will learn three things. Firstly, what questions to raise in order to constantly and optimally position your company for advantage. Secondly, why it is key to develop a strategic insight capability in-house rather than to rely on external consultants. And thirdly, why you will create more value by making your product compatible and combinable. So, to get the podcast started, Mark, can you give the audience a little bit of background between all the things that you're doing these days and how they connect to each other?
Sure. So, I've been working as an academic for the last 15 years. I range from multiple institutions, but currently I Been working at Harvard for 7 years, and I also have a professorship at Halt International Business School. These are my two main, affiliation. The one that I been having for quite some time. They kind of happen close to each other. Harvard happened in 2011, and then Halt happened in 2012. And then since then, I've been doing a lot of different things. I've been advising governments, some companies, but primarily for me, it's governments. I've been writing a lot, and I've been engaged in a number of different projects with the World Economic Forum. So I was involved in 4 different reports. And I've been to the World Economic Forum in Davos. I've been to other World Economic Forum regional meetings. So the forum is another important hat that I'm wearing when actually can, because it's also time consuming.
Interesting. So what is the main topic that unites all these different initiatives?
So I would say, very basic, I start from strategy and economics being my pillars. And then from there, I've been expanding more and more. So, at one point in time in my life, I was exploring more into the sustainability part, and a whole set of things happened around this. Then I started to go more into the new technologies, and that's when World Economic Forum and the idea of convergent technology and my experience at the startup Nexus really became tangible. But then, of course, like everything that really defines itself over time, there have been a lot of nuances. So now I'm teaching more of it's like economic strategy. I do courses on competitiveness. But then I've been doing things more on non-market strategy, business and government interplay, you name it. There's been so many different things that really created a portfolio. But the core is economic and strategy. And then there's been so many other things happening on the periphery of that.
I can see that. Yeah, I follow you on LinkedIn, and I see where you're speaking and the topics you're addressing there.
Yeah.
Well, when I started this podcast early January, the main focus of the podcast was to start sharing compelling stories about the value that we can create when technology and people blend in the right way. And what I've seen when we met in Paris, and I got my hands on your book, you have introduced, or you have written a book together with Terence Tsay, which of course was also a person on the podcast earlier on. And the title of the book is Understanding How the Future Unfolds. Mm-hmm. And it introduces a, from my perspective, very fascinating framework called DRIVE. Mm-hmm. Can you explain in a couple of sentences what DRIVE is all about?
Sure. So DRIVE is a framework of what we call the future trajectories, things that we think will happen for a fact that will have an impact on major socioeconomic systems. And so it's a way to look at the future by engaging the present. And that's a bit of a, it's not a game of words, we really mean it. Rather than thinking about the future as being this futuristic scenario far away from us, we try to determine what the future will look like, which gave the title to the book, by understanding the present. So DRIVE is much more of what we call an instrument for present casting rather than just for forecasting. The forecasting happens, as a matter of fact, because if you're understanding the present and the trajectories, you can also determine how this trajectory will evolve over time. But so I think the key contribution of DRIVE was, we have a language for backcasting. We have a language for forecasting. We don't have a language for casting now. And so we introduce in the book something that doesn't exist, which is called present casting. And that's DRIVE is the instrument that allows us to understand the present. And by understanding, you can say understanding the future by understanding the present, or by understanding the present, we can induce what the future will look like.
Okay. And so if you use that framework and you get the idea about what's happening around you, like the bigger drivers.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Who's typically using this book, or is this a product management tool? Is it a tool for the CEO?
Good question, Todd. I would say we have written the books inspired primarily by story of seniors. And I would say, we have interviewed many CEOs, or if not CEOs, senior vice president or managing directors, but people are standing at the top of the organization. And so we wanted to understand what they were noticing as an impact in the world through a number of different patterns that then we collected together and then define us to come up with the right framework. But in general, we see that government and policymakers, they can use the book to understand how to regulate policy, because, you know, policy is also a critical part of our societies, but it's been underserved for quite some time. But also organizations that are doing strategic, outlooks. I find myself doing a lot of trainings on what we call growth detection. So where markets are going to grow following the trends of megatrends. And one of my courses at Harvard, which is an executive education course, is called Growth Strategies. And Drive is the textbook we're using for that. So multiple uses depending on the challenge that the organization or government are trying to face. He has been written with an open spirit so that many people can use it, not just the senior, although senior have helped us a lot to identify those drivers.
Interesting. And I think I can agree. I do agree with the fact that it's quite broad in terms of how you can use it. I've read it myself and it inspired me to start thinking about a couple of things myself. So it's at that level. So you said you saw the gap in the market where we have a language for forecasting and a question for backcasting.
Yeah.
But when you were looking into this, how did you come to decide on the five drivers that you've selected? What makes them so succinct?
So we just for you to know that, Tom, before Drive, Terrence and I, we were working on a framework that we have also created called Fast Suspending Markets. There was the identification of markets that tends to expand at a faster pace, and they tend to be unnoticed. So our early time was on, let's say, 2013, 14, 15. We were working on grow on market detection through this framework that we introduced. But what we didn't know is what were the conditions under which this market are basically growing. So with that in mind, we started to talk to executives, asking them, you know, what did you notice impacting your business? What are the things you're mostly concerned about? What scares you from the future? We have used the knowledge we have acquired on market growth, and we try to understand the upper level, the mega level. And so when we had that journey, we started to realize that the most recurrent terms were the one that eventually became the Drive framework. So maybe I can let you know later about specifically the different letters, the acronym. But so Drive is not just an invention. It's mainly evidence-based from the conversation we have with seniors of what were the most common topics or themes that were emerging in the life organization today.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you mentioned kind of naming the five drivers. Can you go through them one by one and explain very shortly why they are important each by themselves?
Of course. So I think D stands for demographics. One of the things we noticed more and more in the interviews was the fact that the changes in our population pyramid and our social economic fabric is something that is impacting many organizations. So the fact that, for example, we're getting older, that we tend to, globally, that we tend to live primarily in cities, that we don't have as many kids as we used to have, let's say, 40 years ago. They're all things that impact, of course, consumption. And so many of our interviewees, they were referring to the point in which aging is going to change the nature of products in the future. From, you know, large aggregator company, they might need to enter markets for product for seniors, to, for example, holiday making companies that will need to start packaging their holidays to an entirely different set of what family stands for. Sure. So that's what Drive really, where the D originally came from. The R, when we were talking to organizations that were sensitive to resources, we were noticing that more people were starting to worry about what will happen when certain type of resources will become less available. And so I think in the book, we make extensive reference to water, because it's one of the things that mostly came from our conversations. And it goes from, you know, company like, for example, Pepsi, or Coca-Cola, who need water to clean their pipes, all the way down to company like Nestle, who are in the water business, to organizations that are into agriculture and they have to worry about irrigation, or to manufacturing companies because they need water to run manufacturing and electricity. So So we found water to be the most common elements and resources in general. We had conversation on energy, but it wasn't so, I think, concerned as the conversation on water. Then after we defined DNR, we were clear that these two were important. We started to have more and more input coming from the increasing gap between those who have and those who don't have. So interesting at this stage of our production. So Terence knew and got to know the manager, the CEO, the London Stock Exchange, who got kind of passionate about what we were trying to do. And so he started to be more active in collaborating with us. And so he has written the preface of our book, Xavier Rollet. So it was, for us, an important endorsement, because you have the second largest stock exchange in the world, the CEO that is endorsing your work. And then with him, we have written a LinkedIn article, but because he is an influencer on LinkedIn, then that has a wide reach. And interesting about that, Xavier was particularly interested about inequality. So we call it inequalities on purpose, because we discovered there were several types of inequalities. And so this really, this major gap of poor distribution of raw distribution resources that goes from capital to income, but equally to life expectancy, gender equity. Yep. There are multiple gaps. So DR and I were like the core wires, almost like the wireframe, right, of our framework. And I think what happened afterwards is that we're starting to get more and more exposed to the technology insight, and that's where the V became very visible. So we started looking at the impact of how these technologies are changing primarily production. And so we talk in the book about what we call general purpose technology, GPTs, and now they have changed the nature of production in general. And finally, we were hearing about competition coming from countries where we were not used to hear about competition in terms of innovation. So namely, Chinese companies that were rising at a faster pace, and they were taking over Indian companies or company in what used to be originally emerging economies, that now we're gaining a lot of market attention. And that's where DE came from. So that's kind of the story between among the five different letters of the acronym.
Yeah, and the idea at the end is to go through all of them, but then to start combining drawing the lines and connecting the dots between those, right?
That's right. And sometimes you could argue that some organization might be less interested about the E, because their nature, their business is not necessarily exposed to this. Other organizations, they might be less sensitive to the I, because they find that they haven't experienced large evidence of inequalities. So we don't think that every single letter will mean the same for every single person. But the idea drive is really to provide people with an opportunity to have that conversation in the first place. To say, how are these trends shaping my business right now? How will they possibly shape it tomorrow? And how can I develop either scenarios or capabilities to address this trend, or even change the present so that, you know, consequently I'm going to change the future?
Yeah. So, I mean, from the people that you've been working on so far, have they used the framework to get an advantage out of this in terms of maybe competitive advantage? Or is it more like prepare and defend?
I would say it's mainly mainly to understand how to position themselves in the next few years. So for me, more than a competitive advantage is a positioning advantage. They've been doing a lot of work in how do they position themselves in a market that is changing. And I think now they feel empowered that they understand. And so they don't feel that they have to sit and wait what happens, because that's, of course, is a dangerous game to play. But they are proactively creating the future they want to have. So for me, it's more about their competitive positioning that is different in comparison to before, where the positioning was happening primarily through either trends that tends to be a replication of the past with some, you know, marginal optimization to the future. So I see what has been the sales volume until this period of time, and I will calculate it with a coefficient what I think the future will look like, or it would be organization that will simply think about benchmarking with other company. And I think what we learn in this exercise is that as much as you benchmark, most disruption doesn't happen from your own industry. It happens from outside of your own field of vision. And so drive is a way to engage you with multiple factors, and some of them might be what we call no market factor, factors that are not currently in your business model.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's what I like about it, because you're forced to think in certain lenses. And with that, you identify aspects that you haven't thought about before, but that are either already having an impact, but could have an impact on the short notice.
That's
so
right.
From the people that you've been working with, what is the most impressive example? Can you give an example of how one company or one organization has used it to reposition themselves?
So I think one of the examples we liked, both Terence and I, we kind of follow into the same example when we ask this question, which means we both like it as being exemplary, right, of a drive. We both work with the Ferrari world in Abu Dhabi as for consulting. And so I think it was a period of time where Ferrari world was not too successful in bringing people to their park. And I think it was conditional to, the problem was not as many people go to the park as before. And they were having a lot of strategy trying to think about the repositioning their product into the market. But it's only when drive happened that they understood that there was a dependency on the regional context that was becoming very visible. And so, you know, we're surrounded in a region where you have increasing hostility, the example of the Iran and Saudi Arabia and the war in Yemen. And then we had a drop of, because of the sanction, Russian tourists, they were losing in their exchange with the dollar more and more. And so they couldn't suddenly afford going to the Dubai or Abu Dhabi anymore. And the Russian tourists used to be the largest amount of tourists that the park was basically hosting. So the park was thinking that there was something wrong with their strategy, but actually what was happening is that the environment around them was rapidly changing. And so they had to adapt their strategy, not to their internal dynamics, but to the external ones. And that's when I saw them changing Terrence and I, their orientation towards the local market. They made the bold step towards the local market first. And suddenly we started noticing that as the demographic of their clientele changed from Russian tourists to primarily other tourists, they start to work systematically with Indian tourists and Chinese tourists. So now if you go to Abu Dhabi, Ferrari World right now, every day you see buses of tourists, Chinese tourists that go in and they visit the park. And that happened, I think, in the moment where they realized that strategy should be a response to a capability you want to acquire, but that capability is set by the trends rather than thinking that it's set only from your internal value proposition. And that's one of the best examples where drive really helped them redefine their strategy to a much more inclusive one.
Interesting. Do you also have an example whereby the conclusion was, in order to survive, in order to stay relevant in our industry, we need to take five steps back and use technology to get ahead of the curve? Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm thinking of technologies like machine learning and artificial intelligence and the typical technology that can help and augment people to do things that we haven't seen before.
Mm-hmm. So you mean, Tom, if I have seen an example where the part of the technology was more implemented or?
The conclusion came that we cannot survive going forward with 10% in improvements. We have to go and think 10x.
Oh, yeah. I understand your question. So I think where I have seen the most interesting evolution has been with the banking system. And I think that probably not really 10x is a conversation the banks can afford, but I have seen in multiple training we have done through banks, you know, different one. So from Santander to Monte dei Paschi in Italy, to Bank of America, to the London Stock Exchange itself, right? We have seen multiple clients. And Terrence has seen multiple banks himself. When banks understand this, they start understanding technology as an opportunity to redefine their business model. I think that's when they acquired the understanding of what the V stands for. We ran a training, I think it was in Milan, for small, medium enterprises and investors at the stock exchange. And, you know, they were like surprised. Many of them were still not fully engaged with technology. But after that training, we saw so many people rushing to start defining their technology priorities so that now they were trying to be more competitive in what they used to do before. So I would say The financial sector is where we are seeing the best response that will go towards the definition of technology implementation, because it's a sector that struggles so much even to do 10% on an annual basis. So that area would probably be the answer to your question.
Yeah. So out of what you've learned so far, I mean, the writing of the book itself, the training, the workshop that you've provided, if you would give one big advice to a CEO who wants to kind of get started and understand what they need to do in the next coming years, what advice would you give them?
So I would give the advice to build a team around trends and integrate them as part of their strategic insights as a routine activity to conduct and run, rather than have this as a peripheral activity that tends to be brought on board primarily only by consultants. I think the major problem that I see is that, you know, if you're talking to consulting firms, they all understand why trends are important. And many of them, they've been producing quite good trends reports. But when you're going inside of the organization, this seems to be like a luxury that they don't really have the time to do this. And I think what we argue is the opposite. This should be your main strategic priority, because that's when you're redefining those big questions that drive the operation of the organization. So really build a systematic way to look at trends inside of your company, outside of the help of consultants, make it a more organic process, rather than thinking that because you may be into, I don't know, manufacturing or you're into aluminum or you're into hardware, these things don't matter to you, because of course they do.
No. So that's an interesting thing. And I mean, the world is changing so fast that being not prepared for this and not having this capability inside your company can give you a disadvantage at the end.
Yes.
So that's an interesting one. Is there also, if you look at it from a perspective of technology development, the whole ISV world, I think in the beginning of this podcast, you were mentioning that the thinking in 10% gains is not enough anymore. Do you have any advice towards software vendors in terms of what they have to start doing different based on what you've seen with Drive so far?
So I think we all learn from a company like Amazon these days that platform aggregation of service and service is much more powerful than products. And I think the idea we have explored in the book, when we talk about the combinatorial technologies, this technology they're combining multiple technology into one, reflects nicely, I think, the idea that is in the aggregation that we have much more value than in the specific one. And I think, you know, make products, the advice I would give them, make products compatible and combinable as much as possible. And rather than making products that are protected by intellectual property rights, but they become obsolete in the moment they can be combined, integrated with other ones. And I think this is a lesson that is not easy to learn, because you have to give up a lot of what you consider to be your breakthrough or your technology IPs. But, you know, today, most of the business happens in combination with other business. It doesn't happen in isolation. And even the revenue models are rapidly changing. So that's something that emerged from the study, from the conversation with the seniors, from our deep dive into V. And that's something that I would say to the software vendors, if I can give them an advice.
I think this wraps it up quite nicely. Very good advice. If there's anything you can ask the audience, what would it be? How can they help you?
I think it would be nice to see more emerging trends that could expand the Drive framework. I would love to see how maybe other trends are becoming relevant. You know, we separated into DR, IV, and E, and it's easy also to say Drive, right? It became it's a commercial choice as well to make sure people can pronounce it anywhere in the world. But if there are other megatrends that are somehow relevant, that have the same philosophy of the original Drive framework, we'd love to hear more about in which way we could expand the framework to things that matter and they need to be captured. They're pillars. You know, they allow big conversation to happen, and they're able to be to empower in the connection of the dots. We'd love to see more of this happening. So if there's any advice in that sense, we'd love to hear it.
Okay. I'll make it sing around. So yes. Thank you very much. Where can people go and find more about you or just say hello?
Well, so it's easy, Tony. It's easier than anything else. So there's a lot of social media presence from LinkedIn to Twitter to a professional page on Facebook. These are the three pillars that I use on a regular basis. There is there's a lot of content and videos of me talking at different places on YouTube. There are TED Talks. So it's easy to find me. It's easy to get in touch with me. I have a personal website that is, mark-esposito.com. And there is a contact option where people can send me an email directly. There's actually my email. So there's no redirected window. My email is open. It's my first name, mark@mark-esposito.com. And it's there, is on the website. So there's really no, there's no barrier whatsoever to get in touch with me.
Very good. Very good. Well, thank you very much for your inspirational insights today.
And thanks for having me. And I look forward to the podcast and to sharing it with my network and to your future podcast with other guests. And I'm now a fan. I'm subscribed to your newsletter. So I received actually one newsletter today about the podcast that you have produced. I know that other people that we both know have been recording podcasts for you. So I look forward to both friends' podcast and other other colleagues' podcast in the future.
Cool. Thank you very much.
Thanks to you. Have a good one.
Yes, bye.
Bye, 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 bye.
And to everybody that's listening right now, thank you for tuning into this podcast. I had the honor to speak to Mark Esposito, professor of business and economics at Harvard University and co-founder of Nexus Frontier Tech. The goal of this podcast is to share compelling ideas and showcases to inspire what can be when technology and people blend in the right way. It's my strong belief that too much focus is put on automating people out of a process, in other words, cutting costs, rather than scenarios where the unique strength of people are augmented with technology to change the established rules and to deliver a value that was unimaginable before. So, with this podcast, I want to make a contribution to change this, to create a broader awareness of what can be, to accelerate the adoption by bringing together you, a tribe of like-minded people and organizations. And lastly, to accelerate the initiatives and solutions that could be created because one idea inspires the other. So if you know about stories that are worth sharing, please send me a message. Building the momentum all starts with revealing the ideas, and that starts with you. If you want to have more information, read my blogs, or obtain information on working with me, just visit me on my website, valueinspiration.com. Thank you for tuning in, and you could do me a big favor by rating the podcast or provide me with your feedback. I'll see you shortly in a new episode.